Hey, happy Tuesday, everybody. Welcome to the On Texas Football Tuesday night live stream. Glad to be with you. CJ Vogel, Rod Babers, Aaron Hogan. It's brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings here in the heat of Texas. We know there's a tropical storm making its way into Texas, so be advised of that in the next couple of days. But looking forward to talking some football tonight for about an hour and talking Longhorns. We've got the quarterback commitment for the 2026 class. I'm sure it's been talked about all day today on the On Texas Football channel. We'll get our thoughts and where it's at, what's to come for the Longhorns on the recruiting trail. Also, Rod Babers has found a really interesting conversation about the top returning corners in the SEC. And I'll start with this, Rod Babers, because Jerry Hamilton sent me a note from this morning's coffee and football show this morning that people were clamoring to hear your recollection of the 2001, I think it was 2001, Texas A&M game with fire alarms pulled and Major Applewhite food poisoning. And they needed an eyewitness thought about how that went on. Do you want to start the show with that and your memories of that that game at College Station?
I believe that's 90. Is it the 99 one? Is it
maybe the 99? Maybe 99. I'm trying to think. Yeah, that's the idea. Because I know I was on the post game show of that. That was very beginning of my radio career. So that's important. But that's what Jerry was saying. You have to ask Rod about the fire alarms in the hotel, food poisoning, and the Aggie game. So I was all right.
I believe that's the game where Major ends up with the food poisoning.
That's
and
right.
Then Chris
that's
Sims right. has to end up getting the start there. And I believe that's might be Sims' first start. Yeah, I mean, I think the lesson is, you might want to reevaluate where you stay if you're going to stay in Aggieland. And that's, I think that's perfectly rational. I mean, and I'm not saying the Aggies were involved, but there were definitely some duplicitous activity on part of some of the fans because they pulled the fire alarm in the hotel that night. And yeah, there were a few guys who got food poisoning. I didn't get food poisoning, but there were some guys that ended up getting food poisoning. And man, yeah, we lost that game too. I mean, as a result, that wasn't the reason we lost that game. I'm not saying that was an excuse, but yeah, man, that was wild. That was kind of my first introduction into how crazy the Texas A&M rivalry could be and how wild it was. And after that, I didn't lose to the Aggies after that. I mean, after that, we kind of understood the hostile environment. We had to go down there again a couple of years later, and then we took care of business and won that game. But yeah, man, we lost that game as a result. We just weren't ready for it. And I think, that's a lesson to be learned for this group. Like, I don't know where they're staying. I think now they probably just fly in and fly out. Maybe they, I have no idea exactly how it works now. But like I said, we stayed overnight there, and that probably wasn't the wisest thing. And, yeah, I think from then on, we understood at least the rules of engagement down there at Aggieland. It's going to be a hostile environment. It's going to be crazy. They're wild. It's going to be, I always describe, it's going to be kind of a religious experience for Aggies because they're trying to exercise some demons dealing with this Texas A&M rivalry. So it's going to be crazy. Hopefully they don't have anything as shady as we have to deal with food poisoning and people pulling fire alarms so they don't get sleep at night. But it's going to be, like I said, I guarantee you there's going to be some wild stories coming out of Aggieland.
What would be your plan for this year? If you're playing November 30th, Saturday night, would you go down day of? And just and stay and drive back, bus down and bus back, or would you try to stay in North Houston somewhere and come
yeah,
in?
Yeah, I would say you could. I would say just stay somewhere close.
Woodlands, Conroe, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, and I don't know how
the wraps.
Yeah, I don't know how the private airport works around there and that kind of stuff. So I'm with you. I would try to just stay close and then fly on in, or bus in the day of, depending on when the game. Right, the game could be. What a primetime game, or it's going to be a later
probably
game.
Probably a night game.
It's probably going to be a night game. So, I mean, you might have some time now. That'll throw you out of your routine, and maybe Sark is worried about that, but I wouldn't take a chance down there in Aggieland. I wouldn't do it. I just know firsthand I wouldn't do it. History, listen, the best kind of indicator to predict future events is to study past history and past events. Sark should study that, and don't take any chances, man. Don't go down there. Don't stay in Aggieland. Stay somewhere close. Well, friendlier confines. I wouldn't stay overnight there. I wouldn't do it.
I gotta go look it up. I think Sark's been there as an Alabama coach. Is he not? Am I right about that? I gotta go look at Sark when he was at Alabama. Did they make a trip to Aggieland while he was there? At least he would know same time, yeah, as Rod said, you've got to be overcautious. And that, I believe that was the question Jerry was asking, was what would be the travel plan for this year's re-engagement of the rivalry that's been off?
Is this a smart question? It is a smart. I mean, and like I said, it's not obviously like the Aggies are involved, but you got fans, overzealous, crazy, wacky fans who are.
And we saw the baseball fans in the dugout at the College World Series. I mean, these are, you can't control that, right?
You can't control that. And that's, like I said, that's part of the hostile environment. So you got to consider that. You got to consider, like I said, this is going to be the wildest Texas A&M game in a long time, just because of the rekindling of the rivalry, but also the Aggies might be good. And if they're good, I would say there's even more of a chance of something crazy happening, some unpredictable circumstance arising if you stay down there. So I would, and if you are going to do it, man, take precautions. You got to lock down that facility. You're going to make sure you bring in your own cooks, bring in your own security, everything, man. Make sure, because you can't take any chances. If you're going to try to stay down there, make sure you plan accordingly. I mean, we know that you, I mean, I think the same thing will be true if you're, I mean, that's why, you know, places like that, you know, Lubbock can kind of be like that too. Lubbock can be crazy. Like I said, it's the fans. It's not, you know, the programs, but the fans, man, they can do some crazy stuff.
Any thoughts, CJ, before we move on to recruiting? Or are you on board with Rod?
I think Rod hit it. What's interesting is, you know, this kind of happens all over the country, right? You know, and it's one of those jobs as, you know, the head coach, as, you know, the guy that deals with the ops behind the scenes to make sure that your whereabouts are your remain secret, right? You don't want, you know, many folks, especially behind enemy lines, to know where you're staying. Texas actually a few years ago started hosting their own team at their hotels in Austin before busing over for morning games. So I wonder if that will be the case again this year, especially with some of the big home games that are on the slate this year. So that'll be interesting. But no, it's an interesting world. And so I'm excited again to see kind of where that comes back. And hey, Rod, these games coming back with Texas A&M and Arkansas, I mean, Texas fans are pretty crazy. I'm expecting it to be even more nuts with these two fan bases coming back into the fold, just because it's the first game in quite a while.
Yeah, that's another hostile environment you might want to consider arrangements. You might want to consider bringing in your own security and your own cooks and your own all kind of stuff. I mean, it's just, like I said, that's old school, old deep-seated competitive hatred. And like I said, you just may have some fans who decide to do something crazy and wild. That's usually not the case, but I have experienced it. And don't forget that 99 season. I mean, that's your bonfire season. That's the bonfire tragedy, unfortunately. And so you did have a lot of emotions surrounding, extra emotions surrounding that game. And so I remember feeling that too as a player down there. Yeah. And well, I just like that now, you don't have, of course, a tragedy attached, but you do have the extra provided emotion with this matchup, because these teams haven't played in over a decade, and this will be the first time they do that, and they'll do it in Aggie land.
Well, I'll say this out loud. What if the Aggies win a national championship in baseball and the Longhorns steal their baseball coach? What if that were to happen? I'm just adding that to the layer. You know, we'll see. Ooh. We'll see. Yeah. Yeah. Chris Beard, wow. Times, you know, 200, you know what I'm saying?
That'd be crazy.
Aggies about to play for that. Just putting that out there, because I do think there's a conversation to be had in that deal. But we're talking Texas football on a Tuesday night. It's brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. For me and people who haven't heard, CJ, your thoughts on the Dia Bell commitment and how important that is, not just the player. And then I want you to speak to the player and what impact it can have over the next, you know, 24 months of recruiting, but just Sark identifying his quarterback, who he wants. We've talked about it with Arch Manning. You know, they now get kind of, I don't want to say get to pick their quarterback, but, you know, they identify who they want and go after it. And they already have the commitment for 2 years from now.
Yeah, that's kind of exactly how it is, right? Sarkisian and his staff, you know, AJ Milby, they do a great job of evaluating these quarterbacks very early. Early on, of course, we saw it with Trey Owens, who committed almost a year and a half out from his signing day, maybe 20 months or so from his signing day. KJ Lacy's very much the same way. Of course, we all know Arch Manning was a very talented quarterback, but Malik Murphy also in that conversation where Sarkisian got to campus and said, no, we need a quarterback. We need a guy that can sling it around a little bit. Let me go get my guy. And he went out west to get Malik very early. To do the same with Dia Bell is going to help the Longhorns in a number of ways. Number one, that's a guy that has his own gravity in the sense of where and how he's respected amongst recruits in the 2026 class. We saw when he did commit a number of in-state wide receivers, as well as Florida commits or recruits chimed in. They said, oh, wait a minute. Dia Bell already making his commitment now to Texas. And we saw Brady Hart, a 2026 borderline five-star quarterback today, commit to Michigan. So it starts a little bit more of that domino effect in that class. And, of course, we're watching the tape now. The arm talent is tremendous. His ability to extend plays and get the ball to where it needs to be down the field is very impressive this early on in his age. I believe Coach Shipley actually kind of compared him and his arm talent to that of Patrick Mahomes once he gets out of the pocket. Now, I think there's still a ways to go in terms of maybe the technical aspect of what he needs to improve on at the quarterback position, but we're watching the highlights again. And multiple times now, having gone through this reel, Rod, it stands out to me his ability to extend plays, to look down the field to pass, and that puts cornerbacks, defensive backs, and everybody that is in charge of defending the passing game in quite a bind when you're scrambling to pass more so than scrambling to get yards via the legs.
Yep, no doubt. And I love that that connects to, I think, kind of one of his other extraordinary gifts and traits as a quarterback, which is his ability to be accurate on the run. I love his throwing motion on the run. It's quick. He's decisive. When he extends the play and he's looking at the maturity in his game, when he extends the play, he can scramble. I mean, I've seen him scramble, and he's really athletic, but he doesn't choose to do that. He has lanes, and he decides he's going to extend the play to get deeper into his progression. So that's a maturity in this game. And you're talking about watching a guy who's just a sophomore. I mean, I love what he brings to the table. There's a calm, cool, collected poise when the play breaks down. And his second reaction, usually his second reaction, even when guys are, improvising, there's a bit of chaos to it. And at times they can look very nervous, and they can look like they're a little bit chaotic in just trying to master the situation. He does not. I mean, he has a real poise to him as a player, even when the play breaks down and he has to improvise. And I think that's just the confidence. His athletic instincts are very apparent. And you talk about it, CJ, him looking like a point guard distributing the football out there. And I think that's just because when you look at him, even when he is on the move, as here, he is looking to throw the football downfield, always with the intent on the pass being first. I think that's what Sark likes about his game. Even though he's a dual threat guy, I think he could hurt you with his legs. He wants to be a pocket passer, number one, and then after that, he wants to be a second reaction passer.
I think that's great analysis, Rod, as usual. I mean, that's like, Patrick Mahomes. I mean, that's crazy, but his father was a Major League Baseball player, right? This guy's dad was a 12-year NBA player. So this is now sons of great athletes and professional athletes choosing Sark and choosing this program. That's why I say it's almost like the quarterback's starting to choose Texas as much as Texas is choosing them, right? Once they identify him. I go back to 2020 when Sark's still at Alabama. He recruited Bryce Young, right? And then he recruited Jalen Milroe. And then he got on Quinn Ewers. And then he got on Malik Murphy. And then he's on Arch Manning. And then it's KJ Lacy and Trey Owens. And now it's this guy. I mean, he knows what he's looking for. And it's almost like the Arch Manning commitment and the success at Alabama now into Texas has made it where, why would you commit as a sophomore? It's like, no, I want to go play there. That's where I want to play. That's where I want to develop and hone my skills. And you have a professional athlete's, family saying, yeah, that's where we want to play. It's almost like that Arch Manning stamp of, if it's good enough for the Mannings, it's good enough for my young guy. That's where we want to be. And that to me is just an observer of it. That just bodes well for the position. Because I know, Rod, you've done the deep dive about transfers and quarterbacks and whatnot. Almost like these guys want to play here and be developed by this coaching staff and play with this receiving core and those kind of things. That's exciting for what's coming in the next, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, and that's a great point, E, about the celebrity endorsement, basically,
yeah.
That Texas is starting to get, right? You get the ultimate celebrity endorsement, the greatest in the history of college football, and the Mannings decide, hey, first family of football, who knows more about quarterbacking and the industry of quarterbacking than the Manning family, and they decide, no, our next generation, we entrust it to Steve Sarkisian. By the way, that was before they had the season that they just had, right? So that's when we all, I think everybody perked up when that happened. We all were like, oh, we were all confident starting like Sark. Sark, you know, like I said, I was actually, you know, converted into being a Sark fan. I wasn't initially necessarily on the Sark band. I was converted. I'm a converted Sark fan. So, you know, I think, and there was a lot of folks that I think were converted, but I think to sell the Manning family on your vision and your ability to develop quarterbacks, even, you know, just after an 8, you know, win season, that I think to me, and I remember saying at the time, I was like, okay, if it's good enough for the Mannings, then I'm going to ask less questions. Because the Mannings, and I'm sure they asked all the right questions. Who am I? I'm a football theorist. I'm not a Manning. And I'm sure the Mannings sat in there and they drilled Sark about the X's and O's, the scheme, the strategy, tactics, about him as a coach, about his journey as a coach, and, you know, his personal journey, all that. And they were confident, no, this is the guy to lead the next generation of the Manning family. And I think that was, to me, a great celebrity endorsement. And like you said, now you got another one from these, you know, pro families, these families and kind of these legacies of guys who are playing high level sports with Roger Bell and Aldea Bell. And I'm sure Roger Bell did his research. He's got the resources to do it. And he decides, oh no, Texas is where my son needs to be. And Sark, that's the guy that I want to mentor my son at the position as a ball player, but also as a person. And then, you know, you keep that going, with other guys in other positions. And it's fascinating. I'm with you. I like that term about it's essentially an endorsement. And when you get the endorsement from families of professional athletes, I think it means even more because, you know, they have the resource to do their research and they got connections to ask about, you know, what happens behind the scenes, as we know, they're privy to information that we're not privy to, and they're still giving their stamp of approval.
Yeah, the other thing I think that's helping here is we talk about five-star quarterbacks helping out with the rest of the class. Well, when you start adding some five-star wide receivers and really start stockpiling how talented that room is, what quarterback wouldn't want to go throw to a Jonte Cook or Ryan Wingo,
yeah,
potentially Jamie French and or DeCorian Moore and or Khalid Clockett, right? That helps down the road to have those big-time playmakers on the outside. It's a two-way street on that side. So, again, having the quarterback in the fold early for 2026, it's going to help that class 100%, as well as potentially helping some guys in the 2025 class and even further on beyond that as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Jerry's talked about the impact in Florida, right? To get a kid that's playing in, you know, the state of Florida down in Broward County. Now for the next 2 years, as he plays junior and senior year, you know, Sark and his staff are really spreading the Texas message, right? You got Johnny Nansen and his crew on the West Coast. You've got Tashard Choice now and this commitment in Florida. As you move into the SEC, KJ Lacy is from Alabama. I mean, you're and you know how the Pied Piper effect works, CJ, where – gosh, I mean, this is going to, he's the number one or number two quarterback in the country. And as he plays his junior and senior year, there's an effect that, oh my gosh, he's going to Texas. That just expands your recruiting net and your opportunity to chase other and different players.
Yeah, it absolutely does, especially when it's the quarterback, right? You know, and Texas did a great job in California with Brandon Baker and some of these other kids that they were able to attract late. You know, they don't grab an Aaron Butler in the 2024 class late in that cycle if it's not for the efforts that they've put on earlier in that state, earlier in the cycle. But to have guys from modern day, to have guys from San Diego and down the coast into the LA areas already on campus saying, yeah, you know what, this is probably a good spot for you if you're looking to leave the state, that helps. In the sense of KJ Lacy out at Alabama, in the sense of Dia Bell out of Florida, these guys all attract, you know, the big time camp kids, you know, whether it be camping in Miami or camping in Atlanta. You know, these are two hubs. Rod goes over it all the time. So where the meccas are for talent, NFL talent development, and where they kind of spur up from. I mean, those are two of them right there, Miami and Florida. So you're going to have guys with connections to all of them. And you'll certainly have, kind of an inroads as Texas continues to recruit the Deep South more and more under Steve Sarkisian and this current staff.
Rod, have a look at this. Here's Rajah Bell. He had a tweet today from his you know, son's commitment. As a family, we're so grateful for this incredible opportunity with Texas football. We also met some amazing people from other schools on this journey. You all were kind and generous and made us all feel welcome. Our family thanks all of you for your belief in our son Dia. Now, that's so cool. By the way, Raja Bell's middle name is Dia. So Raja Dia Bell. So that's where the name comes from. But that speaks volumes to what we were just talking about, Rod, that a parent who, you know, I've been around, my kids played select ball and all that stuff. And sometimes parents are out of control. It's always the athlete's parents who are calm and, you know, they appreciate when anybody notices their kid kind of thing. That's kind of how they grow up. I mean, it's changed so much, but that speaks volumes. Another professional athlete who had a dozen-year career, was a heck of a ball player. You know, just singing the praises of Texas and what the opportunities coming for their son. Because as a parent, you'll learn this, Rod and CJ, eventually. I mean, that's all you want. You want the best for your kid, right? No matter what they play, what they do, play an instrument, you know, acting class or acting school, theater. You just want the best for them. And that's what parents do. I thought that was a really cool tweet.
Yeah, no, it's I can say it's once again, literally the endorsement right there of him saying, hey, no, man, there are a lot of schools that were really great, but there's something spacey special about Texas. And, you know, I do think, you know, ultimately this young man, Dia Bell, by the way, things are set up. I mean, his growth and upside is tremendous. And I was just reading, doing some of the research on him. And I see here in the chat that talking about it, CJ said yesterday, averaged, 21 points per game as a freshman. Played soccer, played tennis, played baseball.
Athlete.
He just played a lot. I mean, he just played a ton of other sports. And it does actually translate to his athletic intelligence. And I remember Sark actually saying he likes the multi-sport athletes.
Yeah.
And he likes them not only because it improves your athletic intelligence to play other sports. All right, don't be so specialized early on. Just play other sports. Find out what you enjoy. Find out what you have passion in. But also because it shows how much of a competitor they are. When he's trying to measure competitiveness and who's a true competitor, you know, it helps to know, listen, you ain't going to be the best at, sometimes you are very, sometimes it does happen where you're the best athlete in all those sports.
Right? Oh, Jackson, Deion Sanders.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, oh, that guy, of course. But most of the time, you're going to be the best football player, but you're not going to be, you're probably sixth man on the basketball team. You know, you probably can play, you know, outfield or something on the baseball team. Maybe you can contribute a little bit in soccer. But what Coach Sark wants to watch is, hey, those guys, they don't have an ego, really. They have less of an ego, probably a little bit, but you got less of an ego if they're willing to go from being the best at one sport to then just being a contributor in another sport. Then it shows that they also are a team, or they just want to win. Like, I just want to win. Hey, I'll go on the track team. I'm not the fastest guy on the track team, but, hey, I'll help our team win, and I'll go run the 200, and I'll go run the 4x4. Just because it helps me as an athlete to get better, but also, hey, I just enjoy being a part of a team and team-oriented, competitions. And I think he talked about how that's one thing he doesn't like, somebody that's, hey, I'm great at football. I'm only competing at the things I'm great at. Like, no, you got to compete at everything because you ain't going to be great when you first get here. You just got to be somebody who's willing to grind it out and compete every damn day. Even if you're not the best, with that tenacious competitive sickness, obsessed with it, that you're going to get better every day, obsessed with the process of getting better every day, and no matter what you're doing. And Sark talks about competitors in the classroom, competitors in life, and wanting to be competitors. So he's looking for that competitive gene. Rather than somebody who's just, oh, I'm an elite athlete and this is what I do. And I want to be, I just only want to compete at things I'm great at because that's where I'm praised and that's where I'm comfortable. He wants guys to compete even when they're uncomfortable. And that's the fourth quarter, baby. That's it.
Yeah. Learn to play in the fourth quarter. Learn to play when you're tired and play sports you're not great at, but still be a teammate and a leader and all those things. CJ, your thoughts on that? Anything to Raja, because the other thing I we can't play it on the air. I wanted to have Matthew play it, but Joel Klatt he's got all of our On Texas Football audience will probably see it at some point. Maybe you've already seen it at the YouTube, the big noon kickoff interview with Sark, previewing the Michigan game in the season with Joel Klatt. And then he talks about, you know, not leading with NIL, and they had this debate about it. And, you know, there was a lot of folks on my radio show, and we see them across the country. You know, they think about the Lamborghinis and all the conversation about the Lambos that are out front, and then Sark talking about it's disingenuous to say don't lead with NIL. But I do think this is what we're talking about when you defend the program and say, look, they're not leading with NIL. NIL will be there. There's going to be opportunities. There's no doubt about it. But it's not disingenuous of Sark to say you know, we don't lead with NIL. We could probably talk about Jimbo Fisher in that regard at A&M, where maybe leading with the money and leading with the opportunity. But, you know, Sark is, and his staff have built a program to where you still lead with what is important: competition, playing for championships, development, NFL, you know, a great school, a great city. And yeah, the obvious, you know, prop of the Lamborghinis and the sports cars is those opportunities are going to be there if you show up and perform. What are your thoughts on those who are claiming that whole Lambo thing and then Sark saying to Joel Klatt that we don't lead with NIL is disingenuous?
I think at this point and where the program is at, I think Sarkisian's right. You know, you don't need to lead with NIL. You just put 11 guys into the NFL draft this past year. You brought back some hardware from the Big 12 championship. You made it to the college football playoff, and you have this thing going in the direction that you want it to go, entering the best conference in all of college football. Now, if you were to ask me this question 2 or 3 years ago when Sarkisian first took over the job and maybe you didn't look around the locker room and see as many 4- and 5-star guys in the locker room, and you're coming off of a year that's very frustrating, you're below 500, and you're looking to get back to a bowl game, maybe that conversation starts a little bit differently. But I do believe Sarkisian right now, and what he was saying to Joel Klatt is, yeah, listen, the city of Austin has as many opportunities as any university in the Power Four that you'll find in college football today. You know, Kevin Wynn, 4-star defensive lineman out of Georgia, was just on campus for an official visit. He wants to study culinary. He wants to be a chef. He loves cooking. He likes being in the kitchen. Texas doesn't offer the culinary aspect that he's looking for. What did they do? Brought him out to several, you know, 4- or 5-star restaurants within the city to talk to chefs, to network, to get that opportunity to say, hey, I understand that at the University of Texas, you probably can't graduate with a culinary degree, but at the same time, you can meet people. You can use this University of Texas football connection to come out of it ahead of where you would have been at other programs, even with that degree that you're searching for. So that's where I think Texas has an advantage. Yes, I think Texas offers a great education. I mean, I got the diploma in my wall. I would be remiss to say it was a bad one, right? You know, but at the same time, it's a great city. There are so many opportunities. You don't have the Lamborghini opportunities. You don't have the C4 influences. You don't have Raising Cane's beating down your doors at many other universities. And that's all because of what's going on in the heart of Texas at one of the largest universities, one of the largest metropolitan cities, where you're the only real, you know, attraction sport-wise is the University of Texas. You have that big opportunity to have so many different avenues to pursue that just aren't available elsewhere. And not to mention, Texas is now developing on the field in which they weren't doing over the last 10 years. So right now, and we've talked about it at length beforehand, but when Texas is winning on the field, it's so difficult to negatively recruit them. Aside from saying, yeah, if you go to Texas, you might not play. And I think right now, that's kind of what you're seeing other schools kind of approach rivaling Texas for a number of recruits, because when they do win, that thing is just rolling. Everything kind of comes together, and it's a very difficult place to recruit against.
Yeah. Roger, thoughts? Okay. I mean, you were a recruit at one point, and you've told me many times that your goal was to play for championships, play with great players, go to the NFL and get an education, right? That's what your mom wanted for you, and then you wanted it too. But that doesn't change, and now there's NIL, and you've talked about the golden era for student athletes is here now. You know, how will it change in coming years? But take advantage of it. But I do agree with CJ on that, and I disagree with those who say it's disingenuous, because I don't think they lead with NIL. I think anybody that pays attention to it can say, you know, they make a lot of money other places too. They're all offering you money. Where is the experience the best, and where, you know, can I go be developed, all those things? I mean, what's your thought on the disingenuous part from a lot of SEC fans?
I think a lot of it is jealousy, and yeah, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, arrogantly, but it is getting really tough to negatively recruit against Texas. I've been talking about this for, you know, a few months now. It's just, you know, the old narrative and the old talking points just don't work anymore. You know, it used to be Texas doesn't develop talent. Now they had 11 guys drafted. They're going to have a very similar year in the draft, next draft. You know, they don't play for championships, just won a Big 12 title. This year they're expected to compete for an SEC title. You know, that they don't develop talent really well. We're seeing them develop talent at a really high level. The culture there isn't great. There have been questions about the culture before in recent years. Well, Sark has really remedied any issues of toxicity with the Texas culture. We don't have that anymore. Your culture is actually helping you win games. So, you know, they've never been able to hate on the city of Austin. Even Mac Brown told me back in the day, he's like, I just got to get them to Austin. Right. If I give them to Austin, Austin does have to work for me. I give them to Austin. They start looking around the city and they go around the city and they fall in love with the city because the city is fantastic, which we all know. And then the University of Texas, right? It just continues to get more recognition as a, you know, a top academic university. So, you know, they have that to offer. So there's just nothing to really negatively, you know, recruit against Texas in terms of, you know, your opponent. But I do think now one of the things is, oh man, it's all about the money. You know, that's they have a shallow materialistic mindset there at Texas when that's really not the case. They're just competing in the same space with everybody else in the NIL era. And yeah, I think because Texas has more to sell, they have a lot of things to sell other than plus the NIL. And I think a lot of the universities are, some of the programs are jealous because they understand that there isn't much that Texas can't offer you now that the program is actually competing at a really high level.
Well, and I want to get into the cornerback conversation too, Rod, here in a minute, but I want to finish up with CJ on this one because jealousy is the right word, I believe. And you know, whether it's right or wrong, I mean, the arms race is here. We're in Austin, Texas. We all three live here in the ATX. But, you know, if you're at Alabama, CJ, and Nick Saban's now gone, you don't sell Nick Saban anymore, right? You know, Jimbo Fisher and A&M before were selling NIL. Now it's Mike Elko, you know, Sam Pittman at Arkansas, you know, Baton Rouge. They don't have all this to sell. So you kind of almost have to lead with NIL at a lot of levels to beat Texas, Norman, Oklahoma. That's an advantage Texas has. I think Columbus, Ohio has it. I think USC has it down in Los Angeles. I mean, we can identify the schools pretty quickly that can do that, that don't have to lead with it. And that's why we hope. I think that there's some parameters put around it, whether it's federal government or whatever, to make it a little bit more fair. But in the end, I think Sark, when you say disingenuous with Sark, I think it diminishes what he's done because Texas has always had these advantages, but there were coaches before that didn't use the advantages properly, right? They didn't actually sell all these things we're talking about, or to the point of development and identifying the right talent and building the culture. They weren't, because we've seen it for, gosh, we've been a part of 15 years of mediocre football up until now. That's kind of the Sark, you know, carrot or bouquet of flowers that, yeah, he's finally got this thing right. And now, because I think there's a lot of people trying to make it about just now that I think, Sark, I guess the point would be, I think the current Sark would win in any era that we're talking about, that the NIL obviously helps. But I think what Sark is doing is pulling from Pete Carroll, pulling from Nick Saban, and actually building a program that would win in any era of whatever we're talking about in college football.
Yeah, I think right now you're looking at an era of Texas recruiting where folks want to come to the University of Texas because of the football, whereas maybe under the last couple of regimes, it was you come to the University of Texas because everything that it has to offer. Oh, and you get to play football at a fun level as well. Yeah. That development is certainly changing things. The winning on the field, it changes the way that recruits perceive the University of Texas on a national scale, right? We can only say so much about the city, so much about the education, so much about the opportunities. At the end of the day, if you're a five-star recruit and you're going 6-6 every season, why would I still want to go to that university, right? It makes sense to sit back and say, yeah, I think those coaches were hamstrung by themselves because they just couldn't get the personnel right. They couldn't figure out the way to coach on Saturdays to win the important football games when they needed to. And right now, I think Sarkisian's got that going for himself, and it's paying off with these recruits who are certainly looking back saying, yeah, who were the top five schools last year? Let's see, Michigan won it all. They beat Washington. Oh, Texas was right there, right down the road in terms of potentially playing for a national championship. That's exactly the position a number of these kids want to be in. And if you look back to Nick Saban, a lot of those kids who committed under the last couple of years went to Alabama under, quote-unquote, an NIL discount because they knew Nick Saban would, one, allow them to play for a national championship, or two, develop them to get to that real money in the NFL. And that's exactly what we saw. And there's exactly the reason why a couple starters for Alabama actually threatened to sit out of the Rose Bowl game against Michigan because of NIL shortages. So that's where that's coming in. And of course, Texas can play that big boy ball in that way as well. But at the same time, you don't fight that same battle that Alabama or some of these other programs have to fight because they're just not as well endowed.
Well endowed. It's good to be well endowed.
Like that.
Yeah, we'll talk about. That was good. Their endowment is really good in Texas, I can tell you that. Hey, let's see some super chats. Speaking of folks who are endowing the On Texas Football channel, Brandon wants to say, Rod, check your email for NCAA 25, see if they want you to be in the game. And they like your likeness. Longhorn, great. I got to play as 21. There you go.
Hey, I will honestly, I will check the spam. I have not gotten anything in my email, but I will check the spam. I'll check the old Hotmail. I'll check all those from back in the day to see. And you know what? Even I'll check with John Bianca. Be like, hey, John, y'all got something up there for Rod D? Anything? I don't know how far back they're going. I do remember when they settled the lawsuits for the Ed O'Bannon case for the old EA Sports college football video game. They did give the guys up until 2003. All of them got settlement money of some kind, of varying degrees, depending on how often you were in the game. I left in 02, so I missed it by a year. I missed my check by a year. So they may, I don't know how far back they're going. They got to go back to some kind of legendary. I think you would go back to at least, you know, early to mid-90s if you could with some of those great teams. But I could be off about that. Maybe they won't go back that far. I don't know. CJ, do you know? Yeah.
I don't know. I wasn't so right, Rod, I into, obviously, not having been in the game.
Exactly.
Hey, I was there, Rod. You were 99 to 02, 03. That's when I had everyone's internet. We all had the dial-up.
Exactly.
Check your everyone's internet. All right, let's see, do another super chat here at the bottom of the hour. Jermichael Finley's kid, I know he's a 26 kid. Any thoughts?
Talented kid. Texas will pursue him. He's kind of one of those hybrid wide receiver tight ends. Mm-hmm. Can really move. Plays out of Lido with 2026 Texas commit Racing Guillory, who we can talk about a little bit later as well. But Caden Finley was on campus the very end of May, I believe, early bits of June. He was one of the last visitors to leave campus. So that's Texas is going to recruit him. They've already offered a guy that is firmly on the radar. Next step is to go out, see him, kind of get him back in the fold in the fall for a game.
Yeah.
I got a chance to meet this young man. I was shout out to Anthony Williams. I got a chance to go coach one of his camps, and he was at the camp. He is a unique athlete. He is. And I see what you're talking about the flex, the hybrid, kind of a tweener. You know, sometimes, you know, that used to work against you back in the day. You called them tweeners. Now they call them position flex, right? Now they're hybrids. They used to be, oh, it's a tweener. I don't know what to do with them. So I think in this day and age, it'll be easier for him to find a home. But he's a good looking athlete. Got really good feet and really good hands. For you know, either tight end or wide receiver, really good feet and hands. I don't know about his straightaway speed at wide receiver. I haven't seen that, but his feet are nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure, Michael Finley, J. Mike. All right, one more super chat, and then we'll get a thought on cornerbacks in the SEC. Part of me wants to worry about the corner recruiting, but the other, I've known Sark will get it done. How do we feel about it, Rod? We need Brew. Brew. That's a kid from Conroe, right,
CJ?
That's right. He's currently on campus right now. There are two cornerbacks on campus, three in total, all in defensive secondary. That's Dijon Lee out of Mission Viejo, California. Nathan Tillman, Mansfield Timberview. That's the safety currently committed to SMU at the moment. Of course, Dorian Brew out of Conroe. Listen, I think Texas is a bit in an odd spot with Dorian Brew right now. Supposed to come in the weekend of June 7th through 9th. Ended up at USC. Texas didn't schedule, or he didn't schedule an official visit with Texas on the weekend, exactly where Texas wants him to come in. So a bit of a pickle right now. Of course, getting him on campus is first and foremost the biggest priority with him. But at the end of the day, you would have loved this visit have been on the weekend with, you know, 15 or 20 different official visitors on campus at the same time. So Texas will have their shot, as well as with Aiden Anding, the cornerback out of Ruston, Louisiana. Cade Phillips will come in next week, and Devin Williams as well. So at the end of the day, you got him on campus. You'll see what you can have with him on campus, see if you can make some move that way. But, you know, not necessarily, I think, where Texas wanted at the time when they were originally scheduling these official visits.
Yeah.
And he's a heck of a player too. Go ahead, Rod, your thoughts on the corner position, and we're going to get into the Pro Football Focus conversation you sent us. Let's get into that. But for your thoughts on where they are now.
I haven't watched much of Dorian Brew. I'm going to have to go do that, actually. I'll do that tonight and start watching some of his film and give you my takes on it. But in terms of cornerback recruiting, what I am noticing is that the cornerbacks they're bringing in, the guys like Kobe Black and Santana Wilson, even recently with Caleb Chester, guys they know that can play press coverage. I do think they want to get back to playing some more press. Remember, toward the end of the season last year, they started playing more press. They probably played more press in the last three games, Washington included, Tech, and then Oklahoma State, and they played all year. And I think it could just be because they thought the players now were ready to play more press coverage, that they felt like they were ready to play more press, that they were more fundamentally sound in their technique after so many reps throughout the season. Or, it could be something that Texas is just trying to move toward more of. Now, we know Sark wants to play more press, man. The reasons are simple. The quick game is taking over football, period, at the highest levels. 60% of passing game is three-step drop. Ball comes out quick. RPO game on top of that, which is also a quick game. Ball comes out quick. You want to disrupt that timing. You got to get up in the receiver's face, reroute them, and make them, obviously throw off the precision of the entire RPO play. And then you can isolate the RPA you can isolate it to the slot, or you can double the slot and key the slot however you want to. You can even bump the slot if you want to, which is tough because they got a two-way go. So most teams they'll decide, that they're going to either slow play that slot, or they're going to double key it with a linebacker or a safety. But my point is, with more RPO, more quick game, you need more bump and run corners, that you're going to start to see that more and more. And that's going to be something that's emphasized, prioritized, and valued. And Sark, I think, and his staff are doing it too. And Malik Muhammad is a press coverage specialist. I think Caleb Chester can develop into that too. I think that's one of the things they're prioritizing, that the corners that I'm looking at, they're bringing in. So they want, number one, to recruit things they cannot coach, which are coverage and speed at corner. But one thing you can't coach is a cornerback that can just play bump and run if you need him to. And that's becoming more and more of a priority at the high levels of football.
Hey, Rod, before we get to a thought about Texas electricity ratings, I do want to ask you about the teams like Georgia. Do they play much? I mean, Kirby Smart, right? They like to press cover their corners. Am I right about that? And zone behind it? Is that kind of
they play press. I mean, honestly, the teams that got the horses to do it just play a lot of man, a lot of pressure. LSU's, well, not now, but back in the day. Ohio State's, and even with bringing in, Jim Knowles now, they're really aggressive. You'll see them play a lot of man. I think you're right about
last year. Bama.
Yeah, Bama would play man and would play press. But I think teams have been too reluctant because the wide receiver position is so skilled now. It's just scary athletes at wide receiver now. So those are matchup advantage. Passing game is so sophisticated now in terms of the timing and the precision. And also quarterbacks are more seasoned than ever. So I think they're more accurate than they ever been, especially in the quick game. So I think coaches are just reluctant to play press, but they're going to have no choice, or you just get eaten alive by the quick game. And you can't allow that to happen. It's just too easy to get quarterbacks in a rhythm and a groove. So you'll see it situationally, but I think ultimately Texas, it may determine that cornerback competition between Javion Cole and Gavin Holmes. Yeah, it may determine the cornerback competition, because I think Javion Cole can play off probably as well, if not better, than probably anybody else in the secondary, just from what I've seen. But if they want to play a lot more press coverage, then maybe Gavin Holmes is better at that. And we'll see. I don't know if Javion Cole is, because I haven't seen enough of sample size with him playing press. But I know they want to do it more based on what they did last year, based on football theory about where the game is going. And I think Sark is a smart, student of the game, and he's watching the NFL and he's watching, college football, and he knows his own offense and what would disrupt his RPO-based passing game would be if some team can actually play bump and run. Michigan will probably play some of that. Wink Martindale, now as the defensive coordinator, Wink Martindale likes to blitz, like to bring a lot of exotic pressure packages. They got the best cornerback in college football, and you'll see them play some press because they have the ability to do it.
Yeah. It's well said, as usual. Rod Babers, CJ Vogel. Let me tell you about Texas electricity ratings. CJ, are you correct? It's great to be well endowed.
Yeah, so I thought that meant something else. And then I Googled it once the chat started lighting up, and hard to disagree with the original statement, but it's really a different explanation than I thought it was going to be.
I love it.
The on Texas.
Call Jerry now. We'll get an answer on the phone.
The On Texas Football channel is well endowed, I promise you. Listen, On Texas Football, for those of y'all still living in the deregulated areas of the great state, that would be Texas, like Dallas and Houston and others, you understand deregulated electricity market can be confusing. Texas Electricity Ratings is a shopping website that you compare prices. It's like you're trying to fly somewhere. You want to know where the best value is, what the best times are. That's all you're looking for. And that's what Texas Electricity Ratings are all about. They want you to find one that fits your needs and not be too confusing. Also filters out the gimmickly plans on websites like Power to Choose that will trick you into expensive bills that you don't want to be a part of. So if you're in the market for new electricity in a deregulated area, shop TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF. That's TexasElectricityRatings.com/OTF for all of your electricity needs, and hook them. We appreciate them every Tuesday night. And, you know, those are the appliances you need, the important things you need, like the On Texas Football channel and your electricity. These important things. That's right.
Hey, I'm back home.
That is great. That's good. Well, you know what? That hey, at least mom knows that you're not, your mom's not in the gutter. You're not worried about that kind of stuff. You know, hey, I knew. I, you know, I still think it actually fits. I think it was. It's perfect. It's a perfect pun.
I was saying endowment with money. You know.
Yeah, I loved it. I thought it was money. I was like, that's great. That is.
Not to insult CJ's mom or take it too far, but if you are too well endowed, it doesn't fit. Actually, you know, that's kind of the problem.
Get off the stream, Mom.
All right, let's get to Rod's PFF cornerback rating. This is an interesting conversation here because we're just talking about cornerbacks. The Longhorns recruited in a corner, and let's fire this up there, Matthew, to change the subject real fast and get us on to a better conversation. Do we have Rod's, you know, what you found today, Rod, the graphic? Here we go. Highest returning SEC cornerbacks. And look who's at the top right there. Look at that, Rod. 86.2, Javion Cole, Texas, Vanderbilt's corner. Then you have Maxwell Harrison at Kentucky, Marvin Jones, Gavin Holmes, Malik Muhammad. Yeah. What do you take from that? Three of the top five are from Texas, returning SEC cornerbacks. That's a PFF grade.
Yeah, okay. First of all, I know PFF, and I love PFF, actually. But I do think you need to take it with a grain of salt and understand that their algorithm, their formula, it is based on the competition that Javion Cole played up against, right, relative to the competition level. So they're not saying necessarily that he's the best cornerback returning in the SEC. They're just saying in terms of the grade, he graded out in terms of their play-by-play grades they're giving players, that last year he graded out as an 86.2. And that grade would be the highest grade for any returning cornerback. So that, just so you know, people are like, so he's the best cornerback. They're not saying he's going to be the best cornerback. They're just saying that's how consistent his play is. Now, when he goes up to a level of competition, which he has done great, you know, he's every level of competition that he's advanced to, he's advanced his play and he's progressed and developed into a better player. So I think there will be some things inherently that will translate automatically for him to, this is the highest level in the SEC. He is a ball hawk. He gets his hands on the football. I think he plays really good off coverage because his eyes are really disciplined and he gets, you can tell he's disciplined in getting to his keys, reading his keys in off coverage, whether it be the number two receiver getting back to number one, or be reading the three-step of the quarterback, then getting to number two immediately. That's why he ends up in the right place, because his eyes are in the right place. Coach Aquino would always say, your feet go where your eyes go. If your eyes are in the right place, your feet be in the right place. The reason your feet in the wrong place, because your damn eyes are in the wrong place. Your eyes all over the place, in the backfield, and you're not reading the right keys. His eyes are really disciplined, and that is not a small thing for a cornerback. Puts him in the right place so that he can be a ball hawk. Like I said, I love his off coverage. He's patient in his off coverage. That's why he's so good. A lot of guys, they play off coverage, they're bailing out, trying to get the hell out of there, increase the cushion. The cushion is there to help you, but you're not supposed to keep the cushion the entire way down the field. At one point, you do want to get to the point where you are in phase and obviously in phase or out of phase, but obviously in coverage of the receiver. So the cushion is going to be broken one way or another. You hate receivers that are so damn fast like Xavier Worthy that your cushion is gone in a second and a half. All right, but he's patient getting out of his back pedal, so he's closer to a lot of the quick game throws. That's why we just talked about guys want to play more bump and run coverage to be close to the quick game. He reads the three steps, so the slants, the quick outs, the hitches, the curls, when the ball is out, he is there to be really tight and sticky coverage on those plays. And he's really good at cutting guys off on deeper throws. So I see why he's so consistent. I think he, among Texas, I think it's possible, and I've said this before, that he could win that job. I know what Gavin Holmes brings to the table. Gavin Holmes is a good player. You see it right there. But if he translates his off-coverage skills and can prove to be a good bump and run corner with the playmaking ball hawking ability, there's a chance he earns more snaps at that cornerback position than Gavin Holmes. Just saying, it's a possibility. Right now, I think Gavin Holmes has the advantage in that competition just because he has familiarity with the scheme and he knows, you know, the keys and he knows the personnel. But if Javion Cole can, you know, acclimate quickly, I wouldn't doubt that he's splitting them reps early on this season and then maybe taking more of them by midseason.
It's a great grade. And CJ, you've talked about and documented, and we talked about it last Tuesday, and I saw your tweets and conversation about the lack of experienced quarterbacks the Longhorns are going to face this year, right? I mean, that's a huge advantage, right? Carson Beck obviously is the best quarterback they'll face, but beyond that, they're not – the schedule stacks up to where they're not going to see a Dylan Gabriel or a Michael Penix this year, at least until they get to the SEC title game or beyond, right? They're seeing a lot of new break-in quarterbacks that that's a big advantage because they have seasoned players in the back end and a, you know, third, fourth year defensive staff that should be able to attack that.
Yeah. I was talking to a friend in the industry up in the DFW area earlier today who covers Texas very closely and was talking about the cornerbacks. And I think he actually sent me this same list. You know, he said, are you buying this? And I said, you know what? Maybe not yet. And I do like PFF. I think they do a great job. I think, you know, for the most part, they have some tremendous stats that you don't see anywhere else. For the grading, that can be up for, you know, debate for whoever's looking into it. I'm actually more surprised Vanderbilt has two of the top four than Texas and three of the top six. But more so to the point. He brought up an interesting point. And Rod, what do you think about Texas playing a little bit more zone coverage in 2024? With the result of these inexperienced, kind of young, you know, kind of happy-go-lucky quarterbacks that Texas is set to face, you look at it, I mean, Alex Orji, again, I need to see him consistently throw the football before I have any sort of judgment on the quarterback that he is. Jackson Arnold, we know what kind of quarterback he can be at times when pressure's in his face and he's still not getting to his first and second reads. We saw that in the bowl game, 100%. You go down the list even further. Blake Shapin's been thrown to throw interceptions. Taylen Green's talented. A lot of interceptions at Boise State. Brock Vandegrift, zero career starts. So there's a number of guys right now that you could look at and say, yeah, you know, these guys are prone to throwing interceptions. You disguise coverage. You play that cover four look. You play man coverage. You give that look pre-snap, and you split off to maybe a cover three look or whatever it might be, however PK draws it up, what Johnny Nansen adds to that room as well. I'm thinking you see more zone coverage because it will allow your guys to read the eyes of the quarterback and jump into passing lanes a little bit more so than finding where the man is, finding through the hands, playing with your back turned to the quarterback where you don't see an errant pass where the ball coming in its entirety. So I thought that was really interesting. I wanted to get your thoughts on it because it made sense to me, especially with Javion Cole, who I think we've talked about it. He plays great off-ball zone coverage. Manny Muhammad, great vision, ball hawk, can play great man coverage as well. But at the same time, that guy, I mean, he reads the eyes of a quarterback very well. We saw that in high school at South Oak Cliff. He gets his eyes in the passing lanes, and he jumps routes. That's what he does. So I'm thinking with the strengths of these cornerbacks and obviously how this schedule, you know, kind of shapes up with the quarterbacks, it would make a lot of sense to at least toss in more zone coverage than what we've become accustomed to under PK and the staff.
It does make sense. And even with Johnny Nansen coming in, I've talked about the Johnny Nansen impact. Nobody in the Power Five arguably played more cover three than Arizona. I mean, they were top three cover three rate in the Power Five. They played cover three more than 55% of the time. So Texas was one of the top five teams in terms of their rate of playing match quarters. So they played a lot of match quarters. So both of those, that's kind of what they majored in. And now that Johnny Nansen's coming over, I have kind of, when after watching the spring game, I said, man, I think they might be playing a little bit more cover three from the Johnny Nansen influence. So that could come from something that you're talking about too. Yes, they still major in their match quarters and then bring in Johnny Nansen, start playing some more, cover three as well. And I could see that. I've theorized also based on last year, they could play more bump and run coverage, and both things could be true, because they just don't play a lot of bump and run outside that boundary corner over there. So both things could end up being true, that they can play a little bit more actual bump and run, but then bring in more zone coverage with that Johnny Nansen influence. So it would make sense. And then maybe they decide, hey, we just don't trust our corners all playing that. We let Malik Muhammad, he's the press coverage specialist, let him do that. And then we can continue on the field side to play off coverage and to play split field coverage at times. And that's how sometimes you're cover three, based on the formation, it turns into cover one automatically, right? If you face a 3-by-1 set, you got trips to the field side. Very, very rarely do you get formation in the boundary. Formation is boundaries when you get trips, you get your numbers in the boundary on the short side. Now, last year, Texas actually faced it a lot, because that was how you would get Texas safeties isolated in coverage. Formation of boundary, they put that safety over there, and you're like, all right, they got the safety covering a number two receiver, money. Let's go at Keaton Crawford. Let's go at Jaron Thompson, that kind of thing. So you don't get that as much, but it is a nice changeup. But usually you'll get your numbers to the field, trying to take advantage of the field, whether that's compressed, condensed sets, or whether they're actually in spread formation. And with that being the case, you can isolate that backside cornerback on that boundary side and essentially say, man, you're in man coverage. That's what happened to us a lot of times. We were playing like, man, yeah, we're in cover four, but you got a single receiver over there with no number two. You're in man coverage. Or you got a single receiver over there with a tight end, Sark motions him away. Oh, basically, I'm in man-to-man coverage. You can come down and bump that guy, even though there's zone pretty much on the field side. So you can see some of that too, kind of a combination of what you're talking about, where, hey, we're playing more zone coverage, but we're going to let Manny do what Manny does really well, which is press coverage.
Yeah, and possibly, as you've talked about, rather better coverage at safety and the Makubas and the Derek Williams, oh, yeah, and, confuse some young quarterbacks too with some different looks. And obviously that's going to be the conversation. Hey, as we wrap things up here, almost an hour into this, hey, CJ, what's to come? Big weekend's coming, right? I mean, we just had DeCorian Moore and obviously Diabel with his decision and more coming. I know Jerry's talked about silent commitments that are kind of out there that'll come in later. What's to come for the Longhorns the next couple of weeks the Longhorns can keep their fans can keep their eyes on?
Yeah, you can expect a number of commitments. Right now, Texas has a handful in the fold right now, just waiting to go public. And again, I understand the argument about silent commitments, whatever. Listen, let these kids have their moment. Let them understand when they want to, kind of go public with it, whether it be a ceremony at school, at home, whatever it is. All these dates kind of have special meanings. So let them do that. There are several committed to Texas based off of last week's official visits. This week's will certainly garner a few more as well. There are three guys on campus right now. I actually just threw up a tweet earlier about Dorian Brew at DKR currently as the sun sets looking out over the stadium. Pretty sweet photo, actually. But three guys on campus right now. That's Nathan Tillman, that's Dijon Lee, and that's Dorian Brew, three defensive backs. Number of big-time guys coming in this weekend as well, headlined by Michael Fasusi, Jamie French, Khalik Lockett. Yeah, there's that photo by Dorian Brew. Thank you, Matthew. Absolutely getting an idea, and maybe it is better for three of these guys to get that extra time with the coaching staff compared to what it might have been with 15 or 20 guys on campus last week or this week. So we'll see with the remarks coming out of it. But at the end of the day, Texas sits out 11 commitments. The most recent one was Caleb Chester, June 11th. I bet that number is sitting right around 17, 18, maybe 19 by the middle of July.
Okay. And the DeCorian Moore thing, I mean, where is that? I mean, the latest in your mind, is it just he's going to Oregon? I know that for a visit. And I think I heard Jerry say this morning that if the family had their choice, it would be Texas. But, the kid's got to make his call.
Yeah, no, I think Texas, again, sits in a really, really solid spot right now. Oregon's going to have to hit that one completely out of the park for that to become a discussion right now. Again, when you have, what was it, Rod, 12 guys, 12 family members come down for that trip.
Yeah.
That speaks a little bit more to me. Sarkisian, you know, rolled out the red carpet. He was sitting right next to him for most of that afternoon, most of that trip. So it makes sense to me for Texas to be out front. I think that's the spot that the kid wants to end up at. A number of connections to the school, great quarterbacks down the road for him to receive passes from. At the end of the day, I think it's just going through the visits, kind of evaluating all of his options, and then taking a step back to say, now's the time for me to shut things down and join the class.
Okay. Last thing, guys, I'm flying out to Las Vegas tomorrow afternoon.
Good luck.
I'm going to be there for two and a half, three days. Give me, I'm giving you my outside. I'm going to make some futures bets. Texas minus 5 at Michigan. Thoughts?
Oh, I've risen since, what was it, 3 when it opened?
Yeah.
2.5?
Yeah, well, according to something I saw this week from Circ Sports, but I'll see.
Yeah, they got news.
Yeah, I'll see what it looks like when I get there. We're staying at MGM, so I'll find the best line. But what number are you comfortable at, Texas beating Michigan at the Big House?
I like the opening line at 3. I thought that was probably fair. Again, Michigan, they're going to be a good football team. They're going to have one of the better defenses Texas will face. The question is, if Texas is able to get out early, will Michigan have the firepower offensively to maintain a ball game, even at home? I think they're going to try to limit possessions. We've talked about this. They're going to slow the game down, dominate the running game. But at the end of the day, if they go 2 or 3 possessions early without scoring, I have a hard time believing the Texas offense will do something similarly. There's just too many options, too many weapons for Texas. And Quinn Ewers, a third-year starter who's played in games similar to this, to not have points on the board after a quarter or so. So I'm looking at 3 to feel really comfortable. 5, that means you beat Michigan, the defending champions, on the road by a touchdown. I think that might get a little hairy, but at the end of the day, I feel comfortable about Texas right now going into that game in Ann Arbor. So I'm excited for it.
Says Eddie's coming back with tats. No, I'm not. I won't do that. That's how I lose a bet.
What happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. No, I think I'll take the bet, man. I feel better and better about Texas at Michigan.
Me too. Me too.
I think it's gonna that defense worries me at Michigan, but they can only hold Sark's offense for so long. Sark's offense will break through. They'll have a run. We know that Sark's offense will have it at one point. And CJ's right. If they get that run early in a game, I don't even know if Michigan is offense is set up to score, to have to come back and score in that way. If you can get them and make them and minimize the importance of the running game and force them to have to not abandon it, but have to force them to be in predictable passing situations, I feel like that's the way to go. And the way to go is for Sark to get up early. I think he knows that. And that's why I think Sark's opening script could be crazy. It could be some wild stuff in there, man, trying to make sure he gets up early and takes that crowd out of it. The crowd out of it early, get up early, and enforce Michigan to play catch up and put them in a situation where they need to be in a shootout. Kind of how Texas did against Alabama a little bit. That's kind of the same formula.
Yeah, and put Alex Orji in there. If he is the starting quarterback, you play comeback mode, and then you have an advantage with pass rush. And I think I'm going to go with that. I'm giving you all this real quick on the way. My dark horse Heisman candidate is going to be I don't know what the odds are. I know it's like last I saw it was like +1500 +2000 was Cam Ward at Miami.
Nice.
If you look at Miami's schedule, they don't play Clemson, they don't play North Carolina. That's my dark horse Jaden Daniels kind of 10-11 wins, put up big numbers, sneak in and win the Heisman. Obviously Quinn Ewers, obviously Carson Beck. You guys have a dark horse Heisman future that you like?
I've got one. I've been on it since I think he broke out last year against Texas Tech. But Avery Johnson, the quarterback at Kansas State, I think he's as tall as a threat that you'll see in all of college football. This was Mr. Kansas Gatorade Player of the Year, his senior year. This is an electric athlete. If you haven't seen him yet, go watch what he did to Texas Tech a year ago. I believe it was in Lubbock. I actually had a Tech coach text me after and said, thank God we don't have to play them next year, because that guy still kind of runs through some nightmares that I have. So I thought that was funny. But, of course, that kid is special. He beat Will Howard out for that job and basically, you know, sent him to Ohio State, if you will. Really talented kid. All it's going to take is Kansas State doing what they have been and contending for a Big 12 title. If they do that, I don't have a reason to believe that he won't be in New York if Kansas State ends up winning the Big 12.
That's good.
I like that a lot.
I like that
one. All right, that's good stuff right there. Because Cam Ward, my argument is he was, you know, incarnate word, Washington State. People are figuring out who he is. And what Miami, let him loose. Let him loose.
Yep.
They go 10-11 wins with the schedule they have. And Florida State's their toughest game. They could be in the mix for a conversation.
Woo-hoo! Whoa!
UT boy!
Wow!
Rod, you're getting the good pampers with that one. Look at that.
Hey, I'm going to let wifey know about hey, UT boy. I'm telling wifey tonight that what you did for the family today. I'm going to call her and tell her. That's amazing. That really is. Thank you very much, UT boy. God bless you.
Family.
That's the super absorbent right there, man. That's the triple absorbent. I've been there, man. Hey. All right, guys. Great stuff.
Boy, we toasting you tonight, man. I'm toasting you tonight, brother. As soon as I get in there, man.
All right, guys. Cheers to all of y'all and good times. We're counting down the days. I think we're now about 12 or 13 to the move to the SEC at the end of the month. Down to the days to the SEC media days. And then, the start of the season can't get here fast enough. August 31st for the Longhorns. Appreciate you, T-Boy. Appreciate all the super chats and the conversation. It never ends here on the On Texas Football Channel. Brought to you by Texas Electricity Ratings. Check out their website. Make sure you put /OTF. To find out all the details if you are in a deregulated area of Texas. All the information you need right there. Guys, have a great week, and we'll do this again next Tuesday.
Absolutely.
Thanks, you, D-Boy. We are well endowed.